That's trombonist, composer, and arranger J.J. Johnson with Minor Blues. It's from his 1964 album, Proof Positive. And Harold Mayburn is on piano, Arthur Harper is on bass, and Frank Gant on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and it's a different kind of Free Your Mind Friday today. We will be devoting the whole program to getting your questions answered about the Clinton Foundation. As you know, we've been covering this and talking about it in great detail. And you didn't have a chance to ask questions as we went along because there was so much information to share. So this is the appropriate time to pause your questions for Charles Ortel, who is with us, and 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. So we are wrapping up the week about on the programs we've done about the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation and the related entities that are now at center stage for us. And I want you to know something. A lot of people have been listening to the program, and a lot of writing has ensued since the program began, the series began, with a lot of different reporters working on different angles of the story. And I'm imagining that very soon we'll see a bumper crop of investigative pieces that are pretty much offshoots of what it is we have been discussing on the program. Charles Ortel, as you know, charlesortel.com, is a former Wall Street banker and investor. He gained international attention when he independently investigated General Electric, insurance giant AIG, and General Motors before the 2008 financial crash. And he found them to be engaging in what he called massive fraud. Similarly, he has been investigating the Clinton Foundation and its affiliated offshoots and has declared that the whole enterprise is the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in world history. Now, that is one heck of an indictment, Charles. Thanks for being with us today, and thanks for making yourself available to take questions from the audience.
It's my great pleasure, Utrice. I always enjoy interacting with you, and I look forward to trying my best to answer these questions.
Oh, you know, you're gonna sail through that part really easily because of the monumental work that you have done already and you're continuing to do. What do you hear as we get these calls coming in? What do you hear about any movement at all in terms of prosecutors looking into the Clinton Foundation, or people beginning who had not taken a look at this before, but beginning to look at this problem?
Well, let's just say that it's very tough for me to stay off the phone and off email. That there's, I am overloaded now. We've inquiries, emails, phone appointments from lots of different places. And certainly public opinion is beginning to turn around. People are beginning to at least start asking and looking for obvious questions. I mean, if this is such a great thing, you know, Bill recently made a joke about how he's Robin Hood when I think he's Robin Hood in reverse. He joked about Trump's saying that he thought it was fine for Trump to call this a criminal enterprise. I mean, that's pretty gutsy stuff. I mean, that's catch me if you can, take two, in my view. And it's the kind of behavior you would expect for somebody who's guilty of sin. So you're seeing people start to ask the obvious questions. And one thing that's interesting in my experience, because I've been through in business hostile takeovers, which, you know, back in the 1980s when I did them for clients, that was something that was not as common as it is where it was until, you know, recently. And, you know, when somebody launches a raid, which I would liken this to, generally there's a defense. And on substance, I mean, it's easy to, you know, get into name-calling, but on substance, the Clintons have yet to prove, yet to provide one shred of evidence to try to rebut these charges. So, for example, the Clintons have yet to produce any accounting information at all from any firm for the period October 23rd, 1997 to December 31st, 2004, thinking that nobody would find that information. It's online. It's there. They've yet to produce the information concerning their fraudulently created HIV/AIDS initiative, formed March 24th, 2004, that did file what's called a 990, an annual report, in 2004. And they've tried to hide the one for 2005. Not on their website, but Michael Smith, an investigative journalist based in Australia, of all places, found the 2005. And Jerry Corsi, whose name is not popular with some members of your audience, as a guest, nonetheless, is an inveterate reporter and investigator, and he found the one for 2004. So we have that information in great detail. And that's, you know, it's a stunning indictment when you look through those pieces of paper about where they had bank accounts. You know, they list out the countries, for example, all the countries by law, you had to list out where you had a bank account. The one country they don't name is where they did have a bank account. That's the Bahamas. What was the Clinton Foundation doing in the Bahamas, perhaps as early as 2002, raising money but not disclosing its activities to the wider world? Why were they doing that? You know, why did they induce people to give money in the Bahamas and elsewhere to this activity, supposedly fighting HIV/AIDS? And if it's such a great big success, how come there are no solid metrics? How come, you know, the gay men's health crisis and ACT UP and the organizations that actually really do care about fighting HIV/AIDS, how come they're not making an issue of the fact that in the books for the period 2006 to 2009, there are only $215 million in the books for pharmaceutical expenditures? Yet, when you look on the books of Unitaid, its largest donor, and the Gates Foundation and others, the Clinton Foundation received a lot more than $215 million to supposedly buy drugs, narrowly for that purpose, to fight HIV/AIDS. How come these august organizations, which actually do good work and care about charities, both of which are charities, and 501c3s, they know the rules. How come they're not calling the Clintons to a task? I can tell you one thing. If Donald J. Trump organized a charity and took money to fight HIV/AIDS and didn't do it and didn't check the quality of the drugs, there'd be riots in the streets. So, you know, it's time, I think, for people to really get into these facts and look at the filings. That's the beauty of a public charity. It's not like these missing emails, which we may or may not ever find. A public charity raises money from the public, so the laws are strict and clear. If you raise money from the public, your filings must at all times be true, and they cannot omit a material fact. The Clinton filings are riddled with errors, purposefully obscure material facts, have not been corrected. And on this broadcast, and since we started talking together, the Clinton Foundation and their cronies around the world have been raising hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars over time, and they've never had independent trustees, they've never had independent accountants. Nobody really knows whatever happened to the money, but it's clear if you just do elementary work, as Pete sleuths around the world are now doing, thankfully, finally, to confirm these findings, you check the Gates Foundation findings, try to reconcile them, the Clinton Foundation. Check the Elton John Foundation. Check the Children's Investment Fund Foundation. Check the governments of Australia and Canada and the UK and France and America. The U.S. government's given this thing money. You know, check the single audits which the U.S. government requires and explain to me the discrepancies. Check New York law and explain the discrepancies. But, you know, the Clintons have been getting away with this kind of stuff their entire lives, and they seriously believe they're going to get back into the White House as we speak. You know, the American people are not that stupid. You know, and this is not a pro-Trump, you know, commercial. This is just merely, you know, I'm somebody who doesn't care about the political consequences, but I do care that, you know, people who know better, the Clintons certainly know better. They are not stupid people.
We have Jay from New York waiting to talk with you. Jay, you're on the air. The number to call is 888-874-4888. Jay, you're on with Charles Ortel.
Yes, good afternoon. Mr. Ortel, I really enjoyed the work that you've done in your presentation in regards to the Clintons and the foundation. Basically, my question is, with the history that you have, in the work that you've done in the past in exposing corruptions in other organizations, why do you feel you're having such a hard time for the government and the United States media to be able to honestly address this situation and bring forward the type of charges that are necessary in regards to the corruption that the Clintons are? And could it be just the simple fact that she's running for the presidency, or could it be something else? Because based on the information that you have presented, it seems to me that there should be a thorough investigation, at least by the United States government, and after that, charges should be brought for the things that they've done, but it just seems like it's not going to happen.
Okay, thank
you. Jay, that's a great question, Jay. Thanks for asking. You know, basically, I believe that there are many good people who work in line positions in the government and in the media. But if we think about what's happened since 97, 99 to the present, you know, back in whenever it was that Google, I think, was founded, I forget exactly when, but, you know, Google and Facebook and these disruptors, Craigslist and others, that have eviscerated the print and television and radio advertising market, have put enormous stress on the media complex around the world. And that media complex needs to have access to the President of the United States. And the Clintons have shown a ruthless streak in the past, and even now on this stupid press plane, you know, that they will deny access to anybody who opposes them, and they'll go after people who oppose them in the mainstream media. Now, I'm not part of the mainstream media, so I don't care. I don't need advertising revenue, and I don't need access. In fact, when I do my work, I do it just off the public domain. I don't ask for the Clintons to comment, and I didn't ask for GE to comment. You know, I use what you can get, Jay, in the public domain if you have time. So, I think this is a case where, you know, it'll be like if you ever watched a big building that's been around for a long time get demolished by TNT. It's standing, it's standing, it's standing, and all of a sudden it goes down. That's what I think will happen here. When people look with their own eyes, when people consider the variance between the claims the Clinton Foundation has made and the reality you can see for yourself in the numbers, they're going to say, this is ridiculous. These people are merchants around misery. They're Robin Hood in reverse. Do we really want to give these people the keys to the American and, you know, the kingdom, and then the keys to be the defenders of the free world? Is that what we really want to do? And I think they have a record here. You know, we can forget about the State Department and the emails for a second. When you focus on the foundation fraud, it is a fraud. It meets the technical definition of a fraud. And you know, there's got to be one prosecutor. If they're going to go after Corinne Brown in Florida for $800,000, she's a woman. She's the same age as Hillary Clinton. She doesn't have the Clinton last name. So the feds are going to hold 357-year prison sentence over the heads of a 69-year-old African-American sitting U.S. congressman running for re-election. That seems to me to be a double standard. And I don't understand. Forget your ethnicity. Forget your wealth. Forget your political persuasion. I don't like double standards, and that's a huge double standard, and I think the American people understand that double standard, And I hope the backers of the Democratic Party get it too.
888-874-4888. When Jay, are you there still? No. When Jay asks about whether it seemed to puzzle him that it is not a natural reflex, in other words, that when something of this magnitude is made clear through reporting, not just yours, but a lot of people have been reporting about this. A lot of people have been asking questions, and now they're getting more and more intense, that we still see the resistance to move in the direction of saying, well, all right, let's take a look. The consideration of the election seems to have taken precedence over whether justice has to have a timetable. I don't understand it. It should happen by now.
Yeah, I mean, I can't explain, you know, and I'm not interested in partisan politics or actually in government, so I can't really explain the mysteries of, you know, prosecution. I can't explain why the U.S. attorney in Jacksonville would jump on an African-American 69-year-old woman over an $800,000 slush fund, and why no U.S. attorney anywhere, will get to the bottom of this and jump on what seems to me to be a declared slush fund of $2 billion and an undeclared slush fund approaching $100 billion. I don't get that. I can, you know, only hope that, in fact, justice is moving along and that something will happen. And actually, in this case, Jay, because I was concerned about the U.S. Political ramifications, as in the case of GE, I reached out to foreign media, and I reached out and have reached out to foreign governments, because foreign governments have a dog in this hunt. The Australian government, the Norwegian government, many other foreign governments have given lots of sums that are unaccounted for by the Clinton Foundation. And one way or another, you know, if the U.S. is not going to do its job here, then foreign governments need to step up and do their job. And there now, I can tell you, enough credentialed Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists, you know, looking at this, that one or more of them is going to get the whole picture, and I hope they get it well before the election. You know, I really hope the Democratic Party sits up and takes notice and says, you know, if we pin our star to this fading hope and she gets exposed between now and November 8th, you know, the results of the Democratic Party in this election are going to be disastrous. But does the Democratic Party really want to go down with the Clintons here? I hope not. You know, I think she should be replaced. She should be forced out. She should stand down. Conservatives should be put in place in the Clinton Foundation. They should get to the bottom from the inside of what's really going on, expose the magnitude of this fraud for the world to see, and then, based on, you know, informed knowledge, decide what punishment is appropriate for Team Clinton. And, you know, these people need to be made an example of.
Except that they have operated successfully for so many years with this aura of invincibility. They could do anything they wish, and nobody would even touch them. So, I mean, that's kind of their standard operating procedure right now. They just don't. They routinely disregard the law, fully confident that nothing will happen to them, and in fact, nothing has. So I don't know that who will break tradition and say, well, listen, this I consider this to be a huge issue because it's not just about the money. It's also about the breach of faith in what a philanthropic entity says that it wants to do or is doing or has been doing. And really what the reality is, it's a betrayal of trust, it's a betrayal of interest, and it actually is, it has had very adverse effects on people's very lives. And as I've said before, this is an issue to me very relevant because I see the pattern, too, of the Clintons doing really dirty things, very nasty things in the black diaspora. And that is something that I think I need to hammer home. Why do you choose these places to go do your dirty work, thinking that Well, whoever is likely to investigate also shares your view that these populations are dispensable. There's no sense in, you know, putting all this money in investigating a problem in Haiti, for example. Yes, there's a matter of $10 billion that still has not yet been accounted for in the reconstruction after the earthquake. But you still have other issues that the Clintons are connected to. The cholera outbreak, 10,000 people dead, 800,000 infected. And this is at a time when Hillary Clinton basically was at the State Department and said nothing, did nothing to force the United Nations, because it was the UN peacekeeping troops that actually started this problem. And it was just, well, you know, this is Haiti. So it's a blip. You know, and you get about 2 seconds of attention and you move on. But in the meantime, your brother gets a gold mining license. Your business partner, Bill Gates, gets a pristine land to build these luxury hotels and whatnot. And you're making out literally like a bandit. Haitians no longer really can plant their own rice. They're now importing the rice from Arkansas. And guess who's selling the rice? Bill Clinton's brother. So we have these kinds of things going on in which these countries and African states are used as really dumping grounds and a kind of bizarre, macabre playground for the Clintons, and this has been a pattern. We have Leona from Michigan. You're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Thank you for taking my call, Utrice. Listen, I have a quick question. Can you, Mr. Ortel, can you tell me, what does it mean when it says that that term, involuntarily revoked? I went to that website you suggested on one of the shows, and I saw that form where the Clinton Initiative Against HIV/AIDS Incorporated, blah, 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 in 2008, March 31, had its something irrevocably revoked, involuntarily revoked. What does that mean, sir? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Please call me Charles. What it means is that it's a crippling, mortal wound. So the way our system works is that if you want to operate outside your home state, you have to register typically as a foreign corporation. So this initiative you described, the Clinton Foundation HIV AIDS Initiative, Inc., was created in Arkansas on the 24th of March, 2004. It had been operating inside Massachusetts and illegally around the world prior to that. So that's a problem. But it had to register in Massachusetts, so it did so around May, from memory, 2004. And then they filed an application an application to be a tax-exempt charity with the IRS. There's no record that application was ever actually approved. And I suspect that the IRS denied their application. But that's something that investigators on the inside are going to have to find out. When they had been immediately able to raise money, and that's the problem with charity fraud. There's a lot more people out there willing to give you money than there are good causes. So they had money pouring in, but they didn't have their authorization. They set about then, you know, I would argue, pretending they were engaged in this activity, and they issued press releases and entered in fraudulent agreements around the world, took donors' money, pretended they were helping, never properly accounted for the incoming flows. And then they tried to claim that they arranged a merger as of December 31st, 2005, between the parent company and this entity. They didn't really need to do that because the parent company had created this entity, and it's strange to me that they would even feel they needed to merge it. They already, in theory, had it existing. So they tried to palm off this merger, and they've hidden the merger document from the public. But Michael Smith, the guy I mentioned, the sleuth, the fantastic sleuth in Australia, found this merger document. It was also available through ProPublica, and that shows that this entity was to have been liquidated effective December 31st, 2005. But they continued to operate, pretending this entity existed. And then they signed memorandums of understanding, which are legally not binding governments, to try to fool documents to fool governments and donors around the world that they were a legitimate charity. But Massachusetts caught on to this. And Massachusetts basically said, you know, hey, when you liquidate a charity, the rules are quite strict. I mean, the standard way that fraud happens in charities, you announce a charity, you raise the money, and then you, you know, pack your bags and you go to the Bahamas or some other place with the money. So states like Massachusetts, that is among, I think Massachusetts is one of the oldest states in the union, has a long tradition of charity, has charity laws on the books, understands how fraud works. And so when you liquidate a charity, you got to file special reports. And they never did that for this charity. The reports and the information is actually hidden on the Clinton Foundation website, and it's a joke what they put out in the public domain. Any serious accountant will confirm that statement. It is a bad joke. So Massachusetts caught on. Massachusetts involuntarily revoked the license of this entity to operate. Now, that's a material defect. Under state laws, what you have to do is when you register, if you have an administrative proceeding, that's called an administrative proceeding, you generally have to notify other states that you are now under an administrative proceeding. And involuntary revocation doesn't happen in 24 hours. It happens over the course of many months. So there are notices back and forth. So people at the Clinton Foundation knew they were in trouble. They can't claim they didn't know because there is a record. And they knew for months. They knew as they were fundraising. They probably knew beginning as early as 2006 when Hillary was running for re-election as senator for New York. And they should have told every state in the union that has registrations and every foreign donor that they were under administrative proceeding in Massachusetts. They were under, you know, the records reveal that they were under administrative inquiry in Mississippi. But when I reached down to Mississippi to try to get the good people down there to tell me what was going on, they refused to tell me. In part, I think, because the powers that be down there, from memory, are Democrats, protecting their own. So in Massachusetts, they failed to, they had this license pulled, not just for that entity, but for a mysterious entity called SJSPrivacy.com, Inc., which I would guess is an entity operated by Ira Magaziner, who was running this fraudulent thing up in Massachusetts. And so they pulled both of those things. Now, that happened on the 31st of March, 2008. Not a great date for Hillary Clinton. That's just exactly when her fortunes began to erode in her attempt to run for president the first time. And the Clintons have been trying to bury this. And the people in Massachusetts are trying to bury this. Now, the Attorney General of Massachusetts is a Democrat. You know, she can sit on this. But what I'm hoping is that good people like you, Norma, and others, Nutrice, will start beating the drums and say, listen, tell us what was really going on here. I mean, how could you have the license to operate inside Massachusetts involuntarily revoked, yet you're still operating in Massachusetts? Did you tell all these donors? Did you tell the Gates Foundation? Did you tell the Unitec? Did you tell the various and sundry governments around the world that sent money to you in 2008 about this mess? And if you did, why did they still give you money? If you didn't, why aren't they unhappy about what really happened here? The big question you raise, Norma, and I'm glad you checked.
Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Yes, hi, Chris.
Hello.
How are you? Haven't spoke to you for a while.
Yes. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
What's well, you have a chance to talk directly to Charles Ortel. What's your question?
I absolutely have a question, but quick, let me get this out. I was on another radio program. I tried to get them to pray for you also. I don't know if they will. This is a comedy program, but I tried. My question is, the Clintons are getting away with all this crap. Is it, well, do you know if it has anything to do with their connections with Rockefeller and Rothschild?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think that, the Rockefeller Donor Foundation is a donor to the Clinton Foundation. It's actually not one of the biggest donors. It's a substantial donor. And I believe Lynn Forrester, the Rothschild, is a big Clinton ally. She just had a fancy fundraiser somewhere for the Clinton. You know, I think, I think that there are a lot of very powerful people who have figured out that one virtue, in quotes, the Clintons have is that they can be bought.
Oh, yeah.
And that they can deliver things of tremendous value in return for relatively tiny contributions. Even 10 or 50 or 100 million is not a lot to give them if you're going to get billions back. So if you're asking me, do I think that elements of the big money crowd around the world who've been around forever and control vast fortunes like the Clintons because they're bankable? Of course I do. But, you know, I'm hoping that there are other people and that in terms of numbers, you know, the people who are not billionaires vastly outnumber any set of crooked billionaires, and we all get a vote. So what I'm hoping is that this mess and this textbook case of fraud, whether supported by billionaires or not, is so odious, so egregious, so outrageous, that people on the right and the left will join together, go out to the polls, and, you know, anybody who is supporting the Clintons needs to be voted out of office. This is an outrageous, longstanding, as Utrice points out, pattern of fraud and abuse, reckless behavior that dates all the way back, frankly, to the 1970s.
And so why did the FBI drop the case? FBI had the case. They dropped it.
No, they haven't dropped the case. That's incorrect. They dropped the email case, but they have not dropped. They have not dropped the public corruption / foundation case, to my knowledge.
That's good. That's good for something. Yeah. But they're not going to get with it until after the elections.
Thanks, David.
Well, we don't really know.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you, Jay from Queens. You're on the air with Charles Wortel. Jay, are you there? Okay, so we lost Jay. Another David from Brooklyn.
Yes, David from Brooklyn is here, and I've been listening all week, and it's just fabulous. Mr. Wortel is wonderful, his research on this matter. What, after all of this information, what comes to my mind is this would be an opportunity for the Republicans control the Senate and the House, and they have their candidate, Trump, to blitzkrieg, to pull a blitzkrieg in terms of...
Oh, did we lose David?
I don't hear him.
Oh, yes, we lost David. I don't know what's up. Well, hopefully he'll call right back. 888-874-4888. It was beginning to sound very interesting with the blitzkrieg and all.
I can try to answer what I suspect was his question, if you'd like, Utrice.
Sure. Give it a shot.
Yeah. So basically, several months back, I started reaching out to the House of Representatives when I saw Marsha Blackburn, someone who is courageous, who has brought charity fraud to the fore. In fact, she helped expose the largest known prosecution in recent history, the Tennessee/Texas charity fraud complex, also, I think, in Arizona. When I saw her, making an issue of it once again, trying to get the FTC to investigate, I reached out to her. And ordinarily, the few times I've tried this, what happens is that if you're not from the home district, very often the staff won't really talk to you. But in this case, the staff, there's a great guy there named Chuck Flint and Stephanie Wheeler were kind enough to give me and some colleagues a number of hours, and we took them through this back in late May this year. And they have landed on this as a ton of bricks, and there'll be big news coming shortly out of that office. Actually, at 3 p.m. today, I believe I'm scheduled to speak with certain investigators on the Senate side as well. So the House and the Senate are beginning to take this up. I have not spoken to people on the Trump campaign about it. It's in the public domain. They're well funded. They've got smart people around it. Mr. Trump has made quite an issue of the foundation, the Clinton Foundation. If you go on his site, you'll see he's somebody might be reading my stuff, I would guess. But I'm not coordinating this activity with anybody. I'm just a citizen. I'm doing this because I think charity fraud needs to be stamped out. So what I'm hopeful is that, frankly, what I would really like to see is I'd like to see a Democrat realize that with President Obama and his wife making an exit from politics imminently, that if the Clintons are forced out of the Democratic Party, there's a gigantic opening for somebody who looks at this and says, you know, hey, this is a topic on which we can agree, that we can find bipartisan support. The charity fraud is a horrible thing, particularly when it's done diverting sums away, as Yatrice says, from African Americans here and from, you know, desperately poor people in Africa and people of color all over the world, in Papua New Guinea and Asia, East Asia. When you see this, you stand up and say, you know, I'm against charity fraud. I happen to be a Democrat, but I'm against charity fraud. I think that would change the dynamic in political discourse a lot faster than the Republicans making a blitzkrieg, but it wouldn't be such a bad idea for the Republicans to seize on this issue and get to the bottom of it. They held subpoena power. You know, get to the bottom of what's really going on at the Clinton Foundation.
Well, Dave is back. I wonder whether, Dave, you find that there's some kind of an answer to your question.
Well, I got cut off, and that was the main thing I was thinking about. This is such an opportunity for the opposition to the Clinton Foundation and Clinton herself to use this. And I don't see how they can stand up against this. What I've been seeing in the newspaper is diversionary tactics. They're talking about other things. People are giving her softball questions. You know, they're not getting to the main thing as far as I'm concerned, which is this charity fraud. But they're being diverted. In the Times today, they're talking about what Clinton's talking about, what Trump is saying about Putin and things like that. Anything to get away from the real issue. And this is a major issue. And if the Republicans get smart and really hone in on this and do the blitzkrieg that they need to do, she's done. You know, they'll have to get somebody else. So that's what I was thinking about. And I just, I'm so grateful to Mr. Ortel for what he has taught us. And it's just wonderful. I really appreciate that. And I thank him very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
We thought we lost you there for a while. Jay from Queens, you're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Hi, Teresa. I'd like to try this again. Hi, Mr. Ortel. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Good, because it couldn't be heard before. Yeah, I just wonder, under this highly politicized season that we're in, and the fact that Trump, unfortunately, because he's such a one-worder kind of person with not much depth and has his own troubles, is not, in terms of the media, are you concerned that not that it needs to be played on the sphere of public opinion with regards to the politics that are currently for presidential election, because, as I say, Trump is not the person who would likely be a good deliverer of this factual detail that is needed. So I'm asking whether or not you are concerned that this can just be diffused by virtue of, oh, it's a Republican attack, it's a slight. I think you've done an excellent job. I've been following and reading you from your website and your recent posting as of yesterday that you said you would post, the first of the 40 documents that you were putting up. And I think that, well, it suggests that it's clearly substantive and that the facts are there. So it's not even a question of it being politicized. But are you concerned about that being swayed, that people are outside the Congress really doing an investigation, that it would be played out as partisan politics? What do you think on that?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking. You know, the way I would look at this is, until 2007, I really didn't participate, and I hold myself responsible. I'm 60 years old now. I didn't participate in the representative government that our founders bequeathed to us. I didn't do that. And I'm not interested in party politics. I think the idea of a party or a faction, as it was called back in the Revolutionary War period, is an odious concept. And we don't need a political party. Americans are plenty smart. We don't need to brand ourselves as Republicans. We're all Americans. We've got a great country. And so I was moved. One of my earliest experiences, as I'll share with the audience, as a young child, my parents were very nice, and they sent me to private school, and I was in private school, and these, you know, older school kids came along, and they made this big pitch for us to, you know, support UNICEF. I must have been in, like, I don't know, third or fourth grade, and everybody was getting a UNICEF box to fill up with pennies and take back to school, and I brought this home, and my parents wouldn't let me do it, you know, which was everyone else got to do it, but they wouldn't let me do it because they said, listen, you know, we don't know where this UNICEF money's actually going, and, you know, we don't like this charity, and we're not going to let you do this, and that stuck with me, and so... You know, I think about, and if you go into my first, you've been on my site, if you go to the first foundation report dated April 20th, 2015, you'll see at the back, there's about 7 or 8 pages, I forget now, of statistics about who really gives the money to charity. And yes, Bill Gates has been very generous, and yes, a lot of billionaires give a lot of money away, but relative to income, the people who give money to charity in this country and around the world are the bottom 80%. They give disproportionately high amounts of money to charity. That's what I care about first. A lot of suckers, frankly, unfortunate suckers, are being duped by the Clintons and the people around the Clintons into sending money that they actually should save or use for themselves into this fraudulent charity. If you go and read Bill Clinton's book, Giving, there are all these touching vignettes about how this person gave that, another person gave that. Some class, I think it was, of elementary school kids sent money that they probably should have used for themselves into the Clinton Foundation. So I start there. And I don't, you know, I actually don't particularly care all that much about the election, though I do think it is a pivotal election. As for Trump, you know, like all mortals, he has flaws. He has certainly led a very colorful life. And, you know, he started with a lot of advantages. He is certainly brash. I would argue that, you know, at times he's quite vulgar. But, you know, and I have concerns about him. I wonder whether, like other brash billionaires, you know, who come up and, you know, he turned a million into many billions in theory, will he listen to anybody? And that's a problem, because I imagine that, you know, when you go into the role of being president of the United States and leader of the free world, you start to believe that you don't need to listen. And that's a dangerous thing, because everybody needs to listen. Nobody's smart enough to know the whole truth. And so, yes, I do have concerns about Trump, but I've got a lot greater concerns about, you know, Hillary Clinton. And I'm frankly offended, having been raised by a fierce and powerful independent woman, my mother, who's now passed away, and having given birth, my wife having married a fierce and powerful person who I love, but sadly who I had to divorce, and having now raised a fierce and powerful young lady who's a wonderful pride of my life, along with my son, you know, I am offended at the notion that the Clintons would believe women of this country are stupid enough that they will simply vote based on their sex and not look through the Clinton record. And we have, in Trump, we don't have a record in politics. In Clinton, we do. And Hillary Clinton was cheek to jowl, shoulder to shoulder with Bill Clinton, defending him against some of the most outrageous behavior perpetrated, it is alleged, by Bill against women. She used that as a political weapon in 1998 to advance government causes. That's really somebody you want to hold out as being a vanguard of women? Surely.
Might I ask just one other question?
Sure. Go right ahead.
It is that I noticed that it was posted, I believe, in the New York Times today that the Attorney General Snyderman has finally gotten around to penalizing AIG. I think it is, or is it a General Electric, which I believe based on your work, Ortel, obviously, and their work subsequently. But this was their prosecuting or bringing into court for the actions taken in 2005. So the wheels of justice seem to turn very slowly. What do you think of that, or what do you make of that in terms of the prosecution of these crimes by AIG or even a General Electric and so forth? I believe it's AIG at this case. But it's only now that a local attorney general in the district that it's supposed to handle is doing what you are asking to be done now for all regarding the Clinton Foundation.
Well, that's a good question, and it illustrates a very helpful distinction that the audience needs to understand. in the corporate world, to prove fraud, you have to prove intent. There's a Latin phrase, I won't try to pronounce it, but it's spelled S-C-I-E-N-T-E-R. And you have to prove, actually, in the corporate world, in the for-profit world, that the people perpetrating the fraud knew what they were doing and intentionally meant to cause harm. And also, you have to prove that there was harm caused. Okay, so to prove corporate fraud is very difficult, especially because big corporations have armies of lawyers they can afford to pay to defend against governments, which are not really, they don't have the money and the staff, the government staff to go against an AIG or a GE just isn't there. So you have that. And then also in corporate frauds, the lawyers who are working for the government don't make all that much money compared to the lawyers who are defending GE. And the lawyers in government regularly spend time in government and then go work for the more expensive, the high-paid firms making millions of dollars. So there's a lot of reasons why corporate fraud is tough to pursue. I wasn't aware, frankly, of what you're just saying. I've been so busy and swamped, I didn't see that news. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. On the charity fraud case, on the other hand, you don't have to prove that S-C-I-E-N-T-E-R. You don't have to prove it. All you have to show is that the filings are false and materially misleading, which I will tell you they are, and anybody who takes any time can confirm that they are. And then you have to prove that they were soliciting and that they admit they're doing. You go on their website right now, they're soliciting. They need to be shut down right now in this state and every other state where they're soliciting. And it's an easy thing to prove. You put a conservator in there. That's something the Attorney General of Arkansas can do. You get all the inside books and records. You look at the case. You throw the book at them. And it's a done deal. It's an easy win. And unlike, you know, when you're sitting there and you're trying to think as the, you know, U.S. attorney in New York, do I spend valuable time and money going against GE where I'm badly outmatched, where I've got these high legal hurdles, and I'm fighting, you know, against the super varsity with, you know, people who are great and loyal and wonderful people giving up their time to make less money than they could in the private sector, but where they're nonetheless outmatched. So the discordance doesn't surprise me. And I would encourage those listening in the U.S. attorney's offices around the country, if they are in the FBI offices, this is a chance to stand up and be counted. You know, you're doing the Lord's work, as I think Lloyd Blankfein at Goldman Sachs once said. That this is good work, standing up, you know, to protect people who will, because they don't know better and they're not willing to look at these details, send money they shouldn't send anywhere other than their own homes into the Clintons. This is a time to stand up and be counted.
Thank you, Mr. Hotel. And thank you, Patrice.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jay, for your call. So, Charles, I want to ask something based on what you just said. Yes, the Attorney General can shut it down, but what has to happen to get a whole bunch of them to move at the same time? It seems to me if one person does this over here, one person does that over there, you still have a lot of wiggle room. And, you know, there's dodging the ball. It you know, they will drag this out forever. But if a group of attorneys general would move as a unit and shut this foundation down, then it makes a different kind of impression, wouldn't you say? But is that likely to happen? What has to happen for that to happen?
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I'm just, you know, an analyst. And a person who is, you know, does know a little bit about this situation. As a guess, what will happen is that instead of going for why isn't this happening, the switch will flip, and people who know the law are going to start asking the question, you know, why haven't we done this sooner, and how much more of a problem will we have if we don't immediately leap on this? It'll go from as Larry David might say, to let's go for this. I mean, what are we wasting time on? And, you know, thankfully, there are 50 attorneys general in the United States, and thankfully, there are 200 countries, and thankfully, this thing has been operating in about, depending on how, I don't have the exact count to mind, but it's somewhere between 75 and 100 countries. There's got to be one person in a position to prosecute in a position to make an issue of this, one person willing to stand up and say, on behalf of the gullible people in the world, and on behalf of the good people in the world who are engaged in doing charity, give of their time voluntarily, don't ask for anything in return, do good work, that the so lessening the burdens on government. There's got to be one person in the world who will stand up on behalf of you know, all of these downtrodden people and make an example of the of these Clintons.
Let's get a last question in quickly from Randolph of Montreal.
Yes, hello, Charles. I'd like to know about a little more about this Claude Jutras in Canada. And how this is the previous government? I mean, there's a, we have a new government now, but is the previous government implicated in this whole deal? And just one more quick question regarding: would it be much better if the income tax system would only recognize for deduction of expenses 10 times of what the lowest paid worker earns, so that a company could pay anything they want, but for income tax purposes for deductions, they would only pay 10 times what the lowest paid worker is. So this, because right now what's happening is that the highest paid people just can deduct everything that they, corporation can deduct everything that they pay employees. But would this be a better idea? But those are the two questions I have. Sorry, I know they're long, and please try to answer them.
I'm glad you're only asking me easy questions. I'm just teasing. let me try to answer them quickly. So in the case of the first question on Jutras, that's a charity that was illegally formed, I would argue, in 2007. I have checked your Canadian laws, and I have read up legal memos, and in order for Canadian citizens to donate to a charity that operates internationally, first of all, that charity has to be validly organized in the home country where it is organized, and the Clinton Foundation was never validly organized anywhere. So the deductions that Mr. Jutras took on his personal income taxes in either 2006 is when I believe he took them, starting in 2006, or in 2007 is where the New York Times... Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, in 2007, where the New York Times reports the deductions as having been made, those deductions technically, it seems to me, were not valid under Canadian law, because the Canadian government, the federal government of Canada, had not made a donation to the Clinton Foundation until the 2nd of June 2010. So the Jutras charities inside Canada, I think, are legally organized and operated. The Clinton Foundation is illegally operated, organized and operated. The Jutras joint venture with the Clintons, I should say the Clinton-Jutras joint venture is illegally operated, organized and operated. I don't know about the Jutras main foundation. And the agreement between the Clinton Foundation and the Jutras-Clinton joint venture is illegal and has never actually been disclosed in particular. It's been disclosed in general. So there's a lot to look at in this mess, and it really needs to be exposed fully in Canada. And in fact, tomorrow for some time, I'll be on Canadian National Radio talking about this. Now, in terms of the question of equality of wages, the real issue going on here, frankly, when you look at it hard, is not simply that there's gross inequality between the highest paid worker and the lowest paid worker. It is that technology has advanced so much since about 97, 98, 99 to the present that it makes tremendous economic sense to replace human labor with machine labor in places where that really wasn't done for many years. So the real threats posed to humans are more from machines than in my opinion, than from inequality. I am, by instinct, somebody who favors making the tax code enormously simple. I would much rather have a flat tax across the board. Everybody pays the same percentage on every sort of type of income. It's very simple. So that we get away in our country, I don't know about Canadian tax law, but we get away from a system where people can you know, you create a market and influence by having a complex tax code. And I think if it were just very simple, it was you pick the rate, 12%, 15%, 20%, whatever the rate is, and, you know, very, very few deductions. You made it really simple. That would be a good thing. That would create a tremendous amount of revenue coming in. And then, as you rightly point out, we need to have an incentive to employ people. Right now, the way our government in this country works, especially, you know, in the high-tax states like New York, there's every disincentive in the world to hire a human. You know, it's just ridiculous the hoops you have to jump through to hire a human. And so when you do that, at the same time machines are getting ever more powerful and always cheaper, what you're doing is you're just hastening the replacement of humans by machine labor. And that's what you see. For example, you look at Amazon, a great success story. Where are the workers in the warehouse? They're not that many because they're using robots. You know, and you're going to see that spread. Experts say that that human labor is under threat. So I take your point about the deduction. If I didn't believe that a simplified tax code made a lot more sense, maybe I'd listen more to that. But I'd much rather see corporations be encouraged, GE, AIG, and others. You got to pay a certain percentage of your income in cash corporate taxes every year. That's it. But you're going to pay taxes. Now, remember also when we think about corporate taxes.
Well, actually, we're running out of time, so okay. We have to wrap up. And I want to thank you, Charles, for being with us today and for making yourself available to the listeners to ask directly to you the questions that they have about the Clinton Foundation and related issues. You've done a great job, and I'm sure with developments over the weekend, we will probably be picking this up again next week. But thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise and your investigation and your ideas and your commitment to finding the truth about this. Thanks so much for all of that. And we'll be talking real soon.
Thanks again, Yatrice.
Thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You know you could always learn something from Dr. Jack. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Do something positive. Stay positive all weekend long. Bye-bye.